Today at CU Boulder, there will be two events held to inform the public about the complications and the implications of giving undocumented immigrant children access to public education. This is a topic that has been long marred in controversy. Both events will be happening at the CU Law School. They're also sponsored by the School of Education, and anyone can go. It all goes back to a Supreme Court case. It was Plyler versus Doe. And in 1981, attorney Peter Roos, who was then with the Mexican-American Legal Defense and Education Fund, argued in front of the Supreme Court that undocumented immigrant children should be guaranteed access to public education. Well, the Supreme Court sided with him in that case, in Plyler versus Doe. And since then, children, regardless of their immigration status, are guaranteed access to public education for primary and secondary levels. I spoke with Peter Roos about that Supreme Court decision.
We had about a week-long trial. The state tried to defend it, brought in some expert witnesses that claimed that undocumented kids were taking money away from citizens, and that They really needed to do more than that. They needed to show that even if there was some truth to that, you still need a further reason for choosing not to educate undocumented. And the evidence was that they were brought here as innocent kids, had no culpability for being here. They almost certainly were going to stay here no matter what happened educationally. The same interest of the state in educating them as it would be for anybody else, maybe even more so, because without an education, clearly they were going to ultimately be public charges and maybe causing criminal problems as well. And so we prevailed on equal protection grounds. We prevailed in the Court of Appeals, and then again prevailed 5-4 in the U.S. Supreme Court.
So what did that mean then nationwide for undocumented children in terms of their education?
What it meant is that states could not pass laws to exclude undocumented kids from school. And the flip side is the fear that you have when you're trying these cases, which I did. I tried this case from the beginning all the way to the Supreme Court. Flip side is that if you lose it, there was a very real possibility that large numbers of states would choose to theoretically save money by excluding undocumented kids. So what it did is it provided at least elementary and secondary education for the nation's undocumented kids, which are probably in excess of a million kids.
Well, Peter Roos was the attorney who successfully argued for the right of public education for all children in the country, regardless of their immigration status. That was back in 1981 in the Plyler versus Doe case. Now, that was a successful case. And as I said, that was guaranteed by the Supreme Court access for public education. But Hiroshi Motomura, who is a professor at UCLA Law, who'll also be presenting today at CU Boulder, says that despite that Supreme Court decision, there are still major problems facing undocumented students when it comes to their education.
One is that the Plyler decision guarantees that right only K-12, and so we've seen a whole generation of kids get through K-12, but then really have their education forcibly stopped in the sense that they're either admission barriers or financial aid barriers to really continuing school. So that's one area in which Plyler reaches its limit up when you get through a high school. But the other thing is something that's more acute in this enforcement climate, and that is that that access to education, it may be a simple matter of having the parents drive kids to school. If parents feel that they're under threat of immigration enforcement, it inhibits the ability of kids to get to school to participate. in programs and things of that nature. And so it's always true that any time that immigrants have even the right to do something, their exercise of that right is inhibited by the possibility that the fear, in fact, that enforcement will come and get them.
And this isn't an unfounded fear, as we have seen ICE agents arresting people and detaining people and picking people up in areas that have previously been off limits, at least culturally, whether or not there was a law around that. And I know there have been efforts here in Colorado to block ICE agents, say, from coming to courthouses if immigrants are showing up, maybe even to be a witness in a criminal case. And we're also seeing people being arrested by ICE agents at school. So, I mean, what exactly are we seeing happening at schools? This isn't, like I said, an unfounded fear.
That's right. I mean, it's as you mentioned, you have concerns about the courthouses, and you have concerns about not necessarily in the interior of the school, but near school grounds or when kids are taking their parents are taking their kids to school. And I should mention, and to build on what you were saying, that this is not just a matter of undocumented people being concerned about enforcement. I mean, this affects people who are permanent residents and citizens too. For example, there's a lot of concern right now that even getting certain kinds of medical care, if people who are even eligible for medical care, for example, for citizen children or permanent residents, some of those, I think the climate that we have right now has really inhibited people from getting the medical care that they're entitled to under law because of the concern that it might be held against them later. And so this isn't really just an undocumented phenomenon. It's really the enforcement climate being one that really chills the access of people to actually what they should be granted under the law.
There is so much discussion about the current climate under the Trump administration because of the rhetoric that's been used and the actions that have been taken. But the reality is, even under the Obama administration, there was a huge uptick in deportation. So, I mean, what's the context, I suppose, the recent history of what's going on?
Well, I think that it's true that there are a lot of deportations under Obama, but I think that was a lot of that took place during the early Obama years when he was really trying to get some kind of enforcement credibility to push through broader immigration reform. I think that there was a tempering of the Obama deportations in the later years of the Obama administration, and then at the same time we have the introduction by the Obama administration of deferred action for childhood arrivals, the DACA program that's been very important. So I think that, though, that more fundamentally to your question, what we have under Trump is a real change in philosophy here. I think that the Trump administration is heightening fears, I think, quite deliberately. In fact, they've been quite open about this and trying to do things to deter people from coming for humanitarian and asylum protection. And I think that, you know, they say that they don't have enforcement priorities anymore. But the fact of the matter is that just means that the discretion to arrest people is being delegated down to any particular police officer or any particular ICE agent. And so I think that Obama was really trying. He did a lot of deportations for sure, but I think he created a different climate in which those deportations took place than the one we have right now, which is really one where the concern here, or the concern that I have at least, is that the climate is one of making people as uncomfortable as possible, and not just people who are undocumented, but also permanent residents, students who are here legally but who may want to get green cards later and stay as permanent residents, is to really inhibit the access of those folks to things to which even they might be entitled.
Now, here in Colorado, certain education institutions, and I'm talking about third level here, because you did say that this the Supreme Court decision in the Plyler case really guaranteed the educational rights for K-12, but then people are in limbo once they graduate high school. But you have certain communities that are declaring themselves to be sanctuary communities, albeit there's a very kind of vague legal definition of that. But even here in Colorado, say the University of Colorado and other universities and colleges here in Colorado say that they want to create safe spaces for students. And yet, what power do educational institutions have in the face of what's happening federally?
Well, the term sanctuary is an interesting one because it should not be taken to imply that it's a zone that cannot be penetrated by ICE enforcement, because That wouldn't be true. But there is a safe space concept I think is valuable here. I mean, it starts really from an educational standpoint that educational institutions value students as students and emphasize education above all else, which, of course, is their mission. And so what you have, I think one thing universities can do is to make sure that people are valued there as students, regardless of their immigration status. I think it has a tremendous effect on the ability of students to study and to succeed and ultimately to become contributing members of society. So that's one thing. The other is that schools can take to go to something very practical, and that is to create the financial provide financial resources to undocumented students to allow them to actually go to school. Because it's one thing to this is the thing about Plyler. I mean, it guarantees access, but it combines the access of Plyler with the fact that public education is without tuition charge. And so you need to make sure that universities can take measures, adopt measures to allow financial aid. So that's another thing so these are students their situation. I think those are really important and underrated. The effects, the message that schools send to students by seeing them as students more than anything else, and secondly to provide a financial aid and admission access. I think those go a long way. And you know, you might think of them as part of a larger program of safe zones or sanctuary, but it's really doesn't go so much to like putting a barricade and blocking ICE from coming in, which I don't think can happen, but rather just making sure that schools are a place where people feel that they are accepted as resident society. And that's really ultimately what Plyler tried to do. I mean, this is really the ethos of Plyler, is to understand. The Supreme Court made it clear that it understood the kids involved in that case as people who would really be spending their lives in the United States, which turned out to be true.
Hiroshi Motomura with UCLA Law will be speaking this morning, 11:45 a.m. at the Wolf Law Building on the CU Boulder campus, on a panel along with Peter Roos, who was that attorney from the Mexican American Legal Defense and Education Fund, who argued the Plyler case in front of the Supreme Court. That's at this event that's happening, looking at the Plyler versus Doe case. That's this morning at 11:45 at the Wolf Law Building, completely open to the public, and this evening at 5:30 in the Whitmer Courtroom at the Law School on the campus. There'll be a panel discussion on this featuring Phil Weiser, Colorado Attorney General, taking a look at exactly what the plight is for undocumented students in American schools. And it's completely open to the public.